No, no, no. Do not play the intro again. You forget to click one button, huh? From the broken ruins of Babylon, this is End of Days Radio. I'm your host, Daniel, broadcasting to you all the way from that shimmering Emerald City right here in the heart of the Pacific Northwest. Hello, how are you? I'm so happy to see you and hear you. Today is August 29th in the year of our Lord, 2026. Today's guest is a blast from the past. You may remember him as Alexandros Filth, but he is shedding the surname, or he is shedding the Smurf name, or whatever you want to call it. His real name is Kevin Davies. He is using his real name today because he has nothing to fear. In a short bio, he writes, "He who will not reason is a bigot. He who cannot is a fool. And he who dares not is a slave. He who will not reason is a bigot. He who cannot is a fool. And he who dares not is a slave." And let's go ahead and stop wasting time and bring on the man himself, Kevin Davies. Hello, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. You asked me about last time. It was called End War and Save the Planet. That was the name of the broadcast.
That's right. That's right. End War and Save the Planet. You were on a crusade against violence in this world. And now we probably need that more than ever.
Amen.
How do you feel about all these new conflicts that have started since the last time we did a broadcast?
To quote a great man, there will be wars and rumors of wars. Jesus Christ.
The greatest man who has ever lived.
Praise God. Hallelujah. Amen.
Praise the Lord. Hallelujah. So, Kevin, why did you decide to start using your real name?
I mean, God has not given us a spirit of fear, right? And if I'm trying to do work that is to benefit everyone, it doesn't do me any good to hide at this point. Certainly not if within the next couple of months I'm going to be world famous anyway. So,
what? Why do you say that? Tell me more.
Okay, it's probably better if I just show you. Okay, so I'm going to do a little show and tell here. This is known as a supercomputer cluster. I've got two of them here. There's another couple in the cabinet underneath of here. As you can see, I have a collection of video cards and other computer components, motherboards, RAM, you know, stuff that most people probably don't just have sitting around in their living rooms like I do. A very highly specialized HPC server, fiber interconnect switch, UPS, you know, various other NAS hard drives. So it's about 60 plus terabytes in that particular configuration. And then this is the start of the show right here. You can see there's a battery system, and then, you know, some other components are just kind of shoved in there right now. But this is known as the Falconer unit. And about 6 years ago, I got this really cool idea because I was talking with a friend of mine who was in the media, and they were complaining about how their job was so dangerous. And they're saying, look, they're literally murdering people in Palestine and Gaza that have press passes. That these guys are not combatants. They don't have guns. They have a camera, and they're still being killed. And none of this stuff is live, by the way. Okay, all of it has to be like uploaded later. You don't see any of this stuff live. So I was like, all right, well, maybe there's a way to solve this problem. And I thought to myself, I was like, well, let's look at what's inside of a news van. You know, if you're going to buy a news van, a used one is going to be right around $150,000 for a used one. You're looking at like $15,000 high priority satellite uplinks, you know, per like month or something like this, probably even more than that. You know, and then you have to take the news van around everywhere with you. Well, okay, what if we took everything that's in the news van, all that sophisticated technology from like the 1960s or whatever, and we're just going to shrink it down and shove it in that backpack over there? And that's the idea. We're going to take the affordability of a news van, and we're going to make it even more affordable so that now we can empower everybody who wants to be a member of the media to do exactly that. And I'll even do you one better. The other part of this solution is that when the news broadcasts, it belongs to some corporation. But us as regular people, if we have one of these kind of systems, we're not media. We are, you know, we're independent media, but like essentially we can own the data. And then if these companies want the data, well, if we're hosting it and we have our own hardware, we can charge whatever we want for it. And unfortunately, they're going to have to pay whatever we ask. So, I mean, you know, if you want to know about how do we solve the income problem and where's the money going to come from for UBI and you know, all these other questions, I've got you covered. Ask me anything.
Okay, interesting. So the first thing that goes through my head is how does this differ from just, let's say, streaming from one smartphone?
Ah, I'm glad you asked that question. Okay. Do you own YouTube?
Absolutely not. I've learned that the hard way.
What about Google?
No.
Rumble.
Rumble's a little better, but absolutely not.
Right. Okay. Name one platform, one that is an independent platform that no matter what you want to say, okay, there are things that you are not allowed to say, and if you say them, they'll deplatform you and delete your shit. Name one platform that exists that people can actually go to, they can rely on, that offers them true free speech, and I'm not talking about X, because if you're paying for it, it's not free.
The closest would probably be BitChute, and I'm sure that there's things I could say on there that wouldn't be okay.
Right. That was the biggest part of the problem I needed to solve. This is all self-hosting. Okay. Most people do not have $35,000+ sitting around for them to build an expensive media news server. However, okay, people were spending, in today's equivalency, $60,000 for personal computers back in the 1980s. And it was completely baffling economists. So you can get your hands on this stuff. This is all off-the-shelf stuff that people can get themselves. And it is affordable. I'm not saying it's cheap. I'm saying it's affordable. And now you have your own supercomputer. Or looked at another way, because you asked me about solving this problem. If I, like right now, this service that we're using, this voice over IP, this isn't running on your server at home. This is a service that's running off of somebody else's server slice that they're paying money to borrow, right? And technically the data isn't ours. You see the problem? So if we own our own decentralized hardware and we have our own slice of the data center, now we can start providing our own services. And what does that mean? Because the demand goes down, the price. Right. And then you take the profitability out of all these data centers and you solve our data center problem, you solve our fucking water usage problem and all the other crap.
Okay. What technologies does this employ? Is this just you showed me some PCs and you showed me a backpack. You say everything's in the backpack, but are we talking about setting up one's own server? Am I on the right track here?
Yeah. So let's take Ice Poseidon, for example. He's one of the biggest, most popular, most widely known, you know, colloquially named, live streamers, or IRL streamers, as they're also called. There are companies, firms, organizations that specially cater to IRL streamers. It's the biggest thing in media. Everything's going towards it. If you don't think so, I don't care.
Well, no, I absolutely agree with you, because I mean, I'm streaming right now, not in the way you're talking about, but I definitely know the power of streaming live. It's the way, definitely.
Yeah, so Ice Poseidon, I'm giving an example. Ice Poseidon doesn't actually live stream. I mean, there is some stuff that he does live, but generally speaking, the majority, like the long form media that he does, he pays a team. he'll do a live stream for the team, and then the team takes that feed, they process it, you know, they do all the H.265, all that stuff, and then they send it out to the internet. And of course, they manage all that for him. So still, we're running into the problem of having to rely on, you know, YouTube and Google and all these other organizations. The companies, which
I should add, are all owned by the same people.
Correct. Well, they have absolutely no incentive to, you know, do anything for you, for that matter. So I was trying to figure out, okay, well, the IRL stream rigs, like the backpack ones that you can look up that are really god awful expensive. I think they're like 480 to like 10, you know, 1024, right? You can get like 480i all the way up. And I was like, man, like, why is nobody doing any 4K, 6K, or 8K streaming? Like, why do I just not see it anywhere? And then I just started to do some shopping, and just fucking jaw dropper. The specialized hardware that these firms are literally stamping their names onto, and they can sell it for whatever they want, because it's, you know, what I have is off the shelf parts that are cheap and available in large quantities, meaning that there's more than one way to skin a cat and get the result of the IRL streaming backpack. Why mine is characterized differently, why the Falconer is so much different. I took the concept and I said, okay, do I have a multi-billion-dollar business? Yes. Do I have a full scalable system model? Yes. Do I have demand for that full system scale model? Yes. Now I need to solve a separate problem. I need to figure out, because like Nintendo with the Game Boy, they were like, this is going to be gangbusters. They weren't stupid. They knew what they had. They needed Tetris. Tetris made the Game Boy what it is because they needed some kind of launch title that would be so ubiquitous, understood, seen, and enjoyed that it would carry the name, it would carry the brand, it would carry the hardware. So mine needs to solve some kind of problem. And the problem that I decided to solve is called the digital twin problem. Let me explain. Not all data is equal in value. Some data is obviously worth more than others. The more high fidelity the data, however, generally, the more expensive it becomes. The more technical you get, the closer you get to something that's in the realm of the domain of solutions for, what do they call that? The proof of work problem. Okay. So if I have a 4K HD panoramic VR parsable live stream that people can put on a regular run-of-the-mill VR headset, they can use their Meta Quest 2, they can use their PlayStation headset, whatever VR headset they happen to have, and they can dive in through my website and they can watch my 4K live stream as if they are there POV. There's no other stream, there's no other service, and there's no other hardware on the planet that does what I am offering. And what I'm offering is the beginning of a global public digital library of the entire surface of our planet that is not owned by Google or these big corps.
Okay. A lot of technical facts just got thrown at us. And I believe I'm understanding this, but I suppose my next question would be, I know that a certain organizations have put on VR concerts using special cameras, and I know with VR you have to kind of film in 360 or use multiple cameras. I'm no expert on it. This is future tech. Other than playing games in VR, there's I don't know that much about it. What did you mean by proof of work? I've heard that before in the crypto world. What is that?
So I work for the gas company. I don't work for the gas company. I'm just giving a scenario. I work for the gas company, and the gas company says, we're going to give you 150 houses. And over the next like 4 weeks, over the next month, we need you to go check on these houses. And then, you know, you need to do this job. You're going to check the box and you're going to make sure that the flow rate is correct and it matches what our records say. You'll do a little spraying with some soapy water, and you're going to check and see if there's any municipal leaks outside the house where we have to worry about it. Okay, so I could just like hang out and just drive around on the company's dime and just like sit in my truck in the AC and just kind of peer out the window and never actually get out of my truck and do my job. So there is a problem that we face, and that is called the proof of work problem. How do we know that somebody is actually doing the thing that they say they're doing? Lots of people have claimed that they've done it, but nobody's done it yet. The real proof has to be a surveillable asset that is extremely high fidelity, that basically would be able to stand up in like a federal courtroom and say, hey, nobody's tampered with this. Nobody's copied it. Nobody's deepfaked it. So like we're looking at like an anti-deepfake kind of built-in electronic countermeasure, cryptographic digital privacy-based system.
Okay, and so basically it's kind of like how we know a Bitcoin is a real Bitcoin.
Right. But this is okay. Way more valuable than Bitcoin because Bitcoin doesn't do anything. Remember how I said about the Game Boy, right? It's like, okay, if you just launch the Game Boy by itself, people are like, this is cool, but what do we do with it, right? Bitcoin's like that. What are we doing with it? It's not doing us any good. So this system actually provides a public utility that has more than one value system already baked into its existence. And so it acts as a proof of work. It provides its own kind of digital security. And then, of course, it's asset protection because it is a fungible asset that you now physically own because you have a hard drive space and you're hosting it on your self-hosted server, et cetera. And then you can prove things. And if somebody says, oh, we demand you prove that, you're like, okay, cool, pay me. You want the proof? No problem. You can have the data, but you got to pay for it. It's mine. Oh, you don't want to pay me? Fuck off.
Because it exists on your computer. It's your data. And it's using your own software.
Right. Let me tell you. The governments around the world, okay, they're going to shit the fucking bed because they cannot afford for regular people. This is going to completely collapse the socioeconomic paradigm as we know it because everything is running off of the fact that they're stealing our data and then they're offering us almost nothing in return for it. So when people start locking down their data, game over.
Yeah, the big problem with this stuff is that it's it's your creativity going into these videos that people make. Whether it's cooking videos or it's down the rabbit hole or it's music or whatever, it's your jokes, it's your performance. It's you're putting it in and you're getting pennies back on the dollar if you're even making any money at all. I mean, a lot of people who have shows like mine or people that are involved with things that aren't necessarily smiled upon by the powers that be, they have trouble monetizing their platforms. And they also experience the algorithms basically sandboxing them, which means they're getting blocked from people seeing them and they don't even know, which is really effed up. It's a new way of punishing people rather than just suspending or banning them. It's limiting their access and limiting their reach. Power of free speech does not equal power of free
value. That's the other problem that it solves.
Wait, what's that? Repeat that.
Nullifying their value. So let me explain. We talked before we started the broadcast about Dustin Nemos, right? And why he turned, he basically turned me down. And we had a short discussion about how some streamers. I'm going to say something that's going to be very abrasive and it's going to be very unpopular, and I don't care. 90% of streamers online that are content creators are fucking trash. They're completely worthless. They're completely useless. They do nothing for our civilization. They provide nothing of value for our civilization whatsoever. 90%+. This Falconer system with the 4K, nobody that isn't serious about media, that's serious about the truth, is going to want to invest in any of these systems or be seen in extremely high fidelity. It's going to eliminate that secondary noise market, is what I like to call it, because that's what we have, is we have this oversaturated environment that is owned entirely by the technocrats, and they want the noise to be there because why would they want anybody to have any real truthful information? That doesn't benefit them, right? There's absolutely no incentive for them to give you good information or provide you with streamers that are actually going to provide you with real global value, right? So this, again, the Falconer is meant to solve multiple problems all at once. Sorry.
Why the name Falconer? Did you come up with this name?
A friend of mine and I were actually working on a separate problem, and he's an artist musician. And this is actually a problem that I've seen before. And when he proposed it to me, I was like, oh, you want to solve this? No problem. And so I just typed in my browser and I brought up some components and I sent him links and stuff. And he's like, this is exactly what I needed. I was like, yeah. He's like, well, like, what if I wanted to record video? I was like, well, that was actually, because this was right after, you know, I had talked with my media friend and came up with the idea of the Falconer, but we hadn't named it yet. And I was like, well, I had this idea, you know, a few weeks back, and, you know, basically this is what came of it. And it's applicable across wide, you know, wide industry ranges. So, like, you know, people that work as, like, safety inspectors at big companies and steel manufacturing, things like that, like, this is for them. Like, they're really going to love this, because this is, and not only that, but this is good for insurance, man. All these insurance companies are going to love this shit. You know, they're going to eat it up. There's going to be firms and stuff that are created that just buy my hardware and buy my systems. And then it's literally a multi-million-dollar ready to go, fucking pop the top off of it business, and away you go. And it solves a bunch of problems. The other thing that we discussed was, how would we present this to the public? Because it didn't take us long between me and my friend to discuss, like, how important this technology really was, you know, for our civilization. It didn't take us long to figure that out. And we were having a conversation. Oh, that's right. That's what we were talking about, like, the Romancing Kingdoms. Romancing Kingdoms? You know, the China, Russia, you know, Asian conflicts, the Warring States, all that stuff that was happening. What was that? Arslan, King Arslan, all that stuff. You know, in our distant past. And one of the coolest, I guess, jobs on the battlefield as part of one of those Warring States organizations, and one of the coolest battle technologies probably ever invented, is the Falcon. Is these highly specialized units that had specialty skills. And they used birds of prey, and they were able to gather intelligence, kind of like the movie Mulan, right? And you would send out the bird, and the bird would scout and come back, and then you were able to extract intelligence information from you know, the bird. And that sounds crazy. It's like it sounds like a bunch of woo-woo, you know? All right, cool, you can say whatever you want, but, I mean, it literally allowed armies to conquer entire nations.
Because how did the bird gain information? Like, is this like an occult thing, or like a warg?
I think that it's so interesting that we live in a world where people believe in technology and they don't believe in magic. And that world that we have that's built on technology was built off of legends like the legend of Alexander the Great's mother, Queen Olympias. And Queen Olympias, according to legend, okay, one day while Alexander the Great is out fighting, you know, doing his thing, an invading army, you know, somebody that wasn't friends of his, decided, hey, Alexander and his armies are gone. We can just, like, go to the home castle, and, like, his mom's there. We can fuck her up. And so they get to the bottom of the hill where the castle is, and she has seen them coming, because, you know, they're at the top of the hill. They can see stuff coming for a while. And according to legend, she was standing on top of the hill, completely covered in snakes, naked as a jaybird, just covered in snakes. And according to legend, she raised her hands to the sky, and the ground consumed the entire army at the bottom of the hill. That's according to legend. So, like, I know this isn't just, like, history blah, blah, blah stuff. We know for a fact, not just anecdotally, that Falconer units existed, and they were an important part of military strategy and forward observation.
Interesting.
It doesn't matter how they did it. It matters that it happened, and there's no way that you can argue otherwise. Just period. So the Falconer is more like a meta concept. How do we quantify that digital twin? How are we able to capture them, right? And do I have the right to capture somebody else's bubble digital twin? That doesn't make sense, does it? So, like, yeah, the Falconer is a very personal thing. It's like an individual unit type thing. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. My question was, why did you name it the Falconer? That definitely answers my question. Kind of opens up a lot more questions about this Falconer thing, but that's not the purpose of our show today. This sounds like an incredible new invention. I can already kind of hear what people are going to say, though. I'm going to ask this question for the critics out there that are, you know, they're going to act as naysayers. How do we know that this isn't just vaporware? How do we know that there's actually something in the backpack that's going to do something?
Okay. I'm going to give you some technical babble. I'm going to give you some jargon that you're probably not going to understand.
Somebody will. I might not understand, but the computer heads out there will, I'm sure.
Right. In the old days, you had Alan Turing, and he wrote that paper with a church, Alonzo Church, the Church Turing Hypothesis, called the Halting Problem. And part of that is something called the computability problem. And I'm going to characterize the domain by answering the question and say this. There are no problems that exist that you cannot use a Turing complete software computer programming language to solve. Let me say that again. There is no problem. If you're like, oh, I got this problem, you can solve it with a computer and a computer programming language. To make my point, there was the real life documentary of how porn got on the internet. One of the guys that was part of that group was actually, he used to work at NASA, real brilliant, genius fucking computer programmer, computer scientist guy. And, you know, he was doing LSD and the flight simulators and stuff, and he got caught and they basically fired him from NASA. And so, you know, he's hanging out with this pornographer guy, and they're just like, you know, half baked, and, you know, they're drunk or whatever. And they're like, let's put porn on the internet. Okay, how do we make money doing it? And so when they proposed that question to the programmer guy, he was like, shut up, leave me alone. I'll talk to you in the morning. And the next morning he comes back, he's completed a piece of software. He's like, here we go. And the money rolled in. That small bit of code that he made that makes it possible to verify credit card transactions over the internet, that code is unchanged today. It has not changed at all. Almost every credit card or debit card or you know, physical card transaction that happens across the World Wide Web or across any kind of network either uses that code or uses something that's so similar to it, it might as well be the same thing. So to answer your question about the Mobile Falconer unit, in my effort to circumvent all these way overpriced fucking 4K streaming rigs, I figured out a way to just find off-the-shelf parts that are very cheap and available, and then just you combine them together in the right way and just add software, and boom, it does the thing that normally you would have to pay a ton, you know, $10,000 for one of these mobile rigs that does 1080. It doesn't even do 4K. It does 1080p. Okay. Can we do better than that? Of course we can. And that's what the mobile unit does. It basically takes five individual 4K streams in real time. It then converts them via H.265 standard or H.264 standard, depending on which compression I want to use. And then that allows me to very, very efficiently stream this over a 1 gig connection up down wirelessly, so I can walk around. Because if you're like an IRL streamer, you have to have a really good internet connection. And most IRL streamers usually do it at home because, you know, they can move around their house and they got no problems with bandwidth issues. If the IRL streamers that are going around trying to do real IRL streaming, like they're on the street or they're walking up a mountain or, you know, they're going to an amusement park or something like that, like that's very difficult to do because of the bandwidth requirements for, especially for higher fidelity streams. So then that stream that I create from the backpack over there goes to my base station, which I showed you earlier. And that's what does all the heavy lifting and does all the self-hosting so that hundreds of subscribers can pop on their VR glasses and jump in. And it'll be like there. It'll be so eye-popping that people will probably uncontrollably drool without realizing it. Because it'll be so hyper-realistic. Your brain has never experienced the kind of high fidelity saturation a system like this can produce.
Okay. My next question would be, you mentioned walking around and streaming, and I know on my phone I got the 4G or whatever, 5G, whatever we're at now. This sounds, is this using 5G or is this beyond that? And how does that work exactly?
I don't want to reveal my methods because I don't want the enemies of our civilization to figure out what I'm doing before I get a chance to launch. I looked at Starlink. I don't trust them. I looked at like these, you know, they got the mobile boxes or whatever that are like the, what do they call that? When you turn your Wi-Fi hotspot, it's like a hotspot. You can get a 5G hotspot. There's so many different ways you can do it these days. I even like here we go. I even looked at these guys' phones. They've got a cool system. You know, you can get an international number through them. And originally when I was planning all this, I was like, man, all I have to do is just like 5G connection per phone. So then every month I have to have rotating, you know, five G, you know, let's say $45 a phone for unlimited data. You know, that adds up pretty quick. And then, of course, I have to have a fiber uplink here to the house, you know, that will provide more than enough bandwidth for all the subscribers and stuff coming into the server. So without giving away what exactly I'm using, yeah, I mean, it's something like that. I'm definitely not using satellite. I've looked at a couple of satellite options. It's too expensive. And as I mentioned before, when I was dealing with the news van problem, dude, the priority uplink stuff is, if you have not looked at the prices, go look at prices of priority 1 gig up and down, like secure internet connections that can go around anywhere. They are not cheap. And then I found something.
I didn't even know that those exist. I mean, I always thought to do that, you'd have to do Starlink.
Most people never find out. Like, how many people work for a news organization and actually understand what the fuck a priority uplink is in the first place? Almost nobody knows about this stuff. This is just normal, industrial grade, you know, services that regular civilians and people, you know, never know about, never get told about, you know, et cetera. So, yeah, that's kind of the idea is, you know, this is now so cheap that anyone can afford to do it. They can afford to buy their own hardware. They can afford to self-host, and they can afford the regular, you know, regular service fees that are associated.
Well, these companies that offer Go Anywhere gigabyte service, are they using satellite? I'm not sure how they're doing it. Is this using the traditional cellular network? I'm still not quite sure I'm understanding. Yeah.
Is going over civilian accessible digital networks. This is available networks. You don't have to have any kind of special subscription service or anything like that. There you go. You can afford this. I think my service for this particular 5G connection is like $120 a month, something like that. Yeah,
it's okay. Like $120. So it's using the same technology as 5G.
Yes, but I'm not using a cell phone. It's different. And it's not what would you call that? A traditional, what would I call that? Hotspot. It's not like a hotspot box. It's not one of those little tokens or whatever. You just put a SIM card in. This has, it's a special kind of modem, I guess. I don't know. But they're all over the place. They're used all over the world. I think Verizon is what's on the box, but that's not who the service. I know Verizon's what it says on the box, but that's not how the service is through. Like, that's not who I pay for my service.
Okay, so Verizon is using another one of these kind of hidden tech companies and putting their name on it.
Companies are using everybody else's hardware. So they basically have a contract and they just buy a bunch of these modems from Verizon that normally Verizon would use on their network, and they just use it in their way.
Because we know the elite have been building this techno grid for a while. And basically, you're going to use the enemy's grid that they've built to broadcast in a grassroots manner.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm starting to understand. So let's say me, Daniel, I love this idea, and I do. I genuinely love this idea. This would solve my main problem, my personal problem that I've bitched and complained and cried to my friends about it every day for years. So. What do I need? Do I need to order one of your backpacks and I need to subscribe to a 5G service?
Okay, so you need to decide what fidelity you want to go with. The reason why I say that is because the 4K stuff is not for everybody, dude. It gets prohibitively expensive. Like when I prototyped the 8K system, the 8K system is between $150,000 and $230,000.
Okay, I wouldn't want that because I don't think society is at 8K yet. I don't feel like we're there as a society. I think 4K is more clear that you can see every pimple, and that should be fine.
Yeah. But, you know, at 4K, you know, you're looking at – and it depends on the system you get and why you need the particular fidelity and so on that you need it, and then what your throughput is, like how many subscribers you have and so on. Or you know, I would always consult somebody and be like, what are your expansive needs? In the next 5 years, if you're still going to stream, you know, are you looking to get 100,000 more subscribers? Are you trying to go to 1 million? Are you going to stay under 500,000? Like, what are you trying to do? That's how you do it.
Let's say what your needs are and
what your fidelity wants to be. So, like, if you want to scale really fast, go lower in fidelity because you'll be able to scale faster because all your money isn't in your rig. You see what I'm saying? Whereas if you go with a higher fidelity, yeah, you're going to be really popular, but remember, not all of your streamers are capable of being able to utilize your 4K stream. Not all people that are watching have the necessary infrastructure and so on in their area to actually be able to enjoy your 4K stream. So
because they need high bandwidth too.
Right. So I would suggest you do something like in the 1080 range, and that would give you extremely high fidelity. You would be able to move really fast because I think your rig would be under $50,000, no problem, for your base station. And then you're looking at like $120 for a fiber interconnect and $120 for your internet. That's your rotating costs.
Okay, so I need 50 grand to get started.
50 to 60, yeah. And because this is technological based, you can finance that. You can literally go to a bank, you know, and you can pick multiple if you want, and then say, hey, I'm doing this thing. This is what I need for my job, you know, your job. You can actually show income that's coming in from your digital, you know, streaming services. And then the bank can just approve you for the loan, and then you go out and buy the hardware and set it up yourself. Done.
Okay, like I said, so
$1 billion business is awesome.
At least for now, this might appeal to people that already have a good profits coming from their streaming, but they're probably only getting 10%, or who knows, 10 to 50%. I don't know how all that works, but they could invest $50,000, but they'd quickly make their money back because now they'd be getting 100% of their profits.
Because they're self-hosting. They don't have to pay anybody. They don't have to pay X. They don't have to pay Amazon. They don't have to pay AWS. You don't have to pay any of these guys. I mean, unless you're using some kind of software that has like a subscription or something like that, like you're using Adobe or something, but I don't even use that. My stuff goes from the mobile unit to my server out to my subscribers. That's it. Nothing else.
Have you conducted live in the field tests?
Yeah. We tested the Mark One, and it works. It works. And the original test was we were concerned about the watt hour usage. For the mobile unit, that's always been a concern because I demand 20. I was in the Marine Corps, so like I'm a snob. I'm like, listen, this thing needs to be able to run for 12 hours at a time. We need to be able to have 12-hour battery changes without, you know, video system interruption. And it needs to be easy enough that if somebody wants to, you know, it's not going to completely interrupt the stream and everything that's going on for them to just be able to swap out batteries every 12 hours. Shouldn't be a big deal. And that was the original Mark One test, and it passed with flying colors. So that's why I have the Mark II here, because the Mark I was successful.
Okay. So I want to break into Bohemian Grove, and I want to use your setup because I don't want them to be able to shut me down halfway through the broadcast. So I can invest $50,000. I tested in my backyard. I know everything works. And I could bust into Bohemian Grove, and I could broadcast from there. Nobody can shut me down.
Yes. They can't pull the plug. And this is the coolest part. If they pull the plug and your subscribers are watching, bro, you won. You won. They lost. You understand, right? Because the minute they pull your plug, they've shown their hand. And the subscribers are going to tell everybody, man. It's going to go viral. Nobody's going to shut up about it. They're like, did you see what happened with End of Days Radio? Dude, they cut his stream. They cut his feed, bro. They cut his feed. You're going to blow up.
Oh, exactly, sure.
Exactly what they don't want.
Yeah, definitely. So now from a usability standpoint.
I want to add some details.
Wait, what was
that? I want to add some details.
Go ahead.
I personally think the coolest thing about the Falcon, you know how the Game Boy had all these weird accessories that came out for it? Like they got magnifiers and lights and all this other crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Falconer is self-configurable. So let's say that you're doing special exposés. Let's say you're a hunter. Because, I mean, dude, there's so many applications for this. I can't even begin to tell you. It's nuts. You know, you want to go to a Bohemian Grove. Well, why would you go in there? Why would you do that? So how about you get a special stereoscopic, like, telescope? And you could do like a 1080p stream from a mile away and it'll look like you're right next to it.
What if I wanted to use a drone?
Right. Well, I mean, that comes with risks. But yeah, absolutely. You can configure the mobile Falconer unit to have a direct uplink to the drone. And then your drone footage gets sent to the backpack. Backpack gets sent to your base station. Base station gets sent out to the World Wide Web. You got it. Makes sense, right?
Oh my God. Yeah.
This is the best thing ever.
Yeah, I'm starting to see how this could definitely benefit me and others like me that want to present more truth to the world, but find that they're having to navigate this this techno grid, I don't know what else to call it, that won't let you really broadcast in any sort of truthful or unhinged manner. We're also restrained. As a user, like, okay, so would I have to set up a website myself and do some programming to?
I own my domains and I'm self-hosting, so like all my websites and everything will be hosted on my server and my cluster. I mean, you know, minimal programming. You don't have to be a fucking genius with this stuff. If you can put a Linux distro on a thumb drive, you can set all this stuff up yourself. I mean, of course, I'm gonna act as a consultant and tell you everything you need to know. But once we actually get the real launch going, I'm trying to build a community. And again, as I mentioned before, the community is meant to basically create a Google Street View that does not belong to Google. It doesn't belong to anybody. It's ours. And eventually, we'll be able to host the entire surface of the planet, kind of like Ready Player One, and it'll be ours. The digital twin will belong to the people, as it should.
Okay. And now, are you, did you go, to, do you have a computer science degree? You don't have one, or you have 10 of them?
Listen. Originally, when I went to graduate high school in 2003, I was trying to pursue a neurological science degree, and I gave up my dreams of becoming a, you know, neurologist, and I joined the United States Marine Corps because my sophomore year was 2001. I left lunch period and walked into history class and watched history on television, and then I decided to be a part of it. So I did a lot of school and stuff in the Marine Corps. Not, you know, I wouldn't say that it's, you know, like a computer science degree, but I mean, all education is what you get out of it. So if you put in a lot of work, you're going to get something out of it. I think that I probably got more out of my military training than most people probably get out of their computer science degrees. But I mean, you know, everybody's different. You know what I mean? So no, I don't have a computer science degree, but I'm really fucking smart.
Okay, so you came up with this basically just tinkering. You know, tinkering on your computer and learning step by step.
Anybody could have done what I've done. This is not rocket science, guys.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say anybody could do that. I mean, some people can't even get their computer to turn on.
Oh, I suppose you're right.
Yeah. No, this is complicated stuff.
Okay. All right. You got me. How many people do you know that have a computer supercluster behind them? Yeah, in their living room. Yeah, no, not many people. I get it.
So how does this supercluster facilitate? Does this help you render the videos quicker? Or okay, so we got to – do you have a patent on any of this stuff?
First rule of Fight Club, I can't patent. It's all off the shelf. Everything is off the shelf part. That's the beauty of this system, is because it means that Google can't lock it down. It means that they can't try to scalp everybody by buying up all the stuff on the market to prevent people from buying it, because there's always going to be another hardware-based alternative that people can get their hands on that's affordable and they can make it work for this particular application. Okay. So let me try to give you the condensed version. We've got five viewpoints, right? One facing forward, two facing out, and then two facing behind. We got essentially four quadrants and then one forward-facing camera. Those four quadrants get broken down into H.265 media, you know, very, very compressed stream. It goes over it goes to my server. The server takes that and then produces a 480p VR panoramic low definition, because it doesn't take a lot of resources to produce a 480p, you know, four quadrant panoramic Gaussian splat. That's what it's called. And so someone could actually watch, because that's the way the server is set up. You could hop in, and instead of having to worry about a really good connection and watch a 4K stream, you could just watch the 480p stream. And most people are going to be really happy with that. Or you could just watch the SD forward-facing camera stream and just watch that one camera that's facing forward and watch POV. So there's a couple of options for people in this service. The 4K VR panoramic stream, the NAS that has the pre-rendered 480p grabs that 480p, stitches in the upscaled 4K imagery in real time, and this is all under 30 milliseconds, so that a user, multiple users can actually hop onto the server and they can watch 4K as if they're there. No delay. They're there in real time. Like, they can hear my voice as it's happening. It's crazy. That sounds really, really state of the art, because it is, dude. This is, as far as I'm aware, nobody's ever done this. Nobody's ever done anything like this before. So when you have, when you've got 60 terabytes of SAS storage, 96 terabytes, 240 terabytes, or however much you've got in SAS storage, because 4K, I think it's like, I'm going to use 30 terabytes roughly every 1.5 months. So, like, 3 months is like, it's a lot. It's not a small amount. You have to have a lot of storage space. And I recommend spinning disks, because SSDs are way god awful expensive right now. But there's affordable options for everybody. There's lots of ways that this can be done. Now, mine is set up for 90 days of backup. You don't have to do that. There's no obligation to do that. You could just literally have 10 days of backup and you just go 10 days at a time. That's fine. And you can decide what you want to save, and you don't have to save all of it. You know what I mean? There's ways to do that. The AI comes in. This is where it gets cool. All right. So let's say I've got 100,000 subscribers. For the sake of argument, let's say I've got 100,000 subscribers. There is no way I'm going to be able to handle 100,000 subscriber throughput through this little old server I've got here, okay, through the fiber connection that I only pay $120 a month for. That means I'm going to have some major infrastructure upgrades, power, internet, and otherwise. I'm going to have to build another NAS. I'm going to have to have a server and so on in order to handle that.
Like, doesn't even YouTube have problems like streaming to that many people?
So what if I told you there was actually an easier way to do that?
Okay. There is.
So that supercluster back there could be repurposed, and it will take that 4K stream, and then what it's going to do is it is going, almost like an LLM does to guess what you're going to say next, it's going to stitch in what it thinks the next few seconds might already contain. It's going to guess. And it's going to basically give me a sort of bandwidth boost to allow me to reach more subscribers without having to spend a ton of money in infrastructure upgrades. Does that make sense?
You found a way to use AI to give yourself more bandwidth by using some kind of predictive algorithm.
Oh, think about it this way. When I was in high school, I remember when CD players were going through their advancement, and something called a DAC, a DAC. And so in the old days of portable CD players, you literally could not move it that fast. You would the CD would skip. Where a DAC, it read ahead of where you were listening, and it stored 5 seconds or whatever. So if you shook it up or whatever, it wouldn't skip. Or at least you wouldn't be able to tell that it skipped, because it was already stored in memory. That's what the predictive algorithm does, is it says, okay, let's look forward a little bit. Can we go ahead and start stitching this together? Can we alleviate some of that fill in? And then you don't actually have to bend all that out, because now your AI supercluster is actually pushing that out through the server to your subscribers. And it's sort of pre-rendering what they're going to see before the server sends out the rest and finishes the image. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You basically took the DAC and you converted it into a real-life streaming type of algorithm.
Yep.
You did this just right there in your little room there?
Yeah, man. Why not?
Why not, man? That's crazy. I mean, it's...
Thank you! I'm quite sure you think that I'm mad. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, this is certainly interesting. So... Now, where are we at with this? How do we go from you being Kevin in your room, you discover this stuff? How are we going to expand this and get this off the ground so that people like myself will actually start using it? Like, how do we get there?
So there is a real necessity for this. And I'm going to say one name, and you're immediately going to understand why this is necessary.
Okay.
Charlie Kirk.
Okay. Charlie Kirk. Getting to Charlie Kirk.
Had he been deploying one of these systems, he would not be dead.
Well, it wouldn't stop somebody from killing him.
Sure. I don't disagree with you. However, had he a Falconer, he would be alive today. I am 100% confident of that.
Explain, please.
Well, it was all set up. I mean, you'd have to be a moron not to notice it at this point, right? He didn't know he was going to die, dude. He had no idea they were going to kill him. They didn't tell him in advance, right?
Yeah, but if he had a Falconer,
right? They controlled the feed. Remember, we talked about this. Google has, you know, they controlled who gets it on their media. So they know everybody's going to see this. It was a mob hit, straight up a mob hit. But the mob doesn't want to hit you if you've got a fucking, if you've got a stream service that they can't turn off and they can't control, because then they can't control the narrative. Now you have a jury, witness on the bench that they can't buy. They can't hang the
jury.
Yep.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. It's empowering.
So as a utility, this is an extremely valuable service and resource, because basically it's going to preserve life. And this is the real boon of this system. It is my intention to flood the market with as many Falconers of varying fidelity issuance as possible. Because instead of flock cameras, I propose that we turn the camera the other way around. I think that we need to get flock cameras in every city hall. I think that we need to pass ordinances and force our mayors, force our governors, force our congressmen, force our senators, force the president, force everybody that is in a position of authority and power in every country on the planet to have to wear one of these systems and be under constant surveillance. If you want power, fine. I have absolutely no problem with that. If you want to be rich like Elon Musk, I have absolutely no problem with that. Elon Musk needs to have a Falconer on. If he's so valuable, okay, his insurance company that pays his premiums to pay for his private security, like, they're going to, trust me, they're going to beat down my door and be like, hey, we need one of these on our client. It's a necessity at this point. There's no way around it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. My next question is, and this is kind of going back to what I was saying about the marketing aspect of this, because sometimes you can have a good idea, but if enough people don't know about it, you know, nothing's going to happen. Someone's going to swoop in and come up with something to distract people. Are you planning on developing some kind of app?
Okay. You caught me. You caught me red-handed.
Didn't mean to, but let's hear what you have to say.
It is my intention to use this to launch what I am going to call from this point forward a global public energy exchange, which solves a completely different domain of problems. You know how eBay works? It's like an auction house.
I use eBay all the time. Yeah.
On there and somebody can bid on it, right? And it goes to the highest bidder. Okay. What if you could do that with your own data? What if instead of the billionaires getting your data for free, you got the choice to hold on to your data and be like, whoa, let me find out what it's worth first. Let me put it on this auction house first and see if somebody wants to buy it, and then I'll sell it to the highest bidder. And you don't have to sell it to the highest bidder. You could just experiment and be like, I wonder what my data is worth right now, and see who bids on it. You know what I mean? Yes, the answer to your question is yes. This will come with an app. That's the point. We are going to turn the global financial schema around on the billionaires and technocrats, and we're going to make them pay for our data. Where do you think the UBI money is going to come from? They're going to pay us. They're going to pay us. If they want our data, no problem. Then we get to decide what we sell them and how much we sell it for.
Or at least a simple software that I could put on a server that would work great on a smartphone, that doesn't require a bunch of troubleshooting, that I can set up and I could start streaming right away. I mean, that would be almost as good as an app, because I could see Apple, Google stepping in and saying, you can't be in our app store, or something like that. That could be another roadblock.
One of the problems I saw is I got away from Google, I got away from the Play Store, I got away from Apple, I got away from all that crap. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a headless system. So I don't use monitors for any of this. None of these things have monitors. I don't need it. Once it's already configured, I plug it in, I turn it on, and it's ready to go, and it runs forever. The server has built-in redundancy. The NAS has built-in redundancy. So actually, there's actually a concurrent system that runs next to each other, so that while I'm streaming, if my server fails, there's literally a switch, and it's like the track switches over and the train can keep going. And then, of course, there's an automated process in the back end that will like analyze what went wrong. It'll check good configuration. It'll restart that concurrent service. So if the other one fails, it can switch back to it. There's stuff like that that already exists. It's already in the public domain. You can already get your hands on it. If you want to know more, you can contact me offline about it on a more secure channel. Yeah, I'll give you what you want to know. But yeah, no, absolutely. We intend to produce and offer real professional grade, commercial grade, industrial grade solutions, software solutions that are going to empower the future of this. Yes.
Okay. Now, would you say the way that you described it? Would you say would I be able to call this decentralized?
Absolutely.
Because we don't have a central node. We don't have to, once we buy the software and the hardware, we no longer have to depend on you, Kevin, or a central node to dial into and connect with in order to broadcast, in order to do our thing, in order for people to download our app and watch us or listen to us at any time.
Yep. You'll no longer be able to scream at the algorithm, the babysitter algorithm, and be like, people aren't seeing my content. If they're not seeing your content and you're self-hosting, you're the reason why. Nobody's going to be able to put babysitter algos on your server and prevent you from being able to get the views that you deserve. If you're producing quality content and people like it, you're going to take off like gangbusters, dude. That's what it is. And it's basically what I'm doing is I'm legitimizing the marketplace. Because right now, the marketplace is controlled by billionaires and technocrats who want incompetence, who don't want the truth to get out. And so there's a reason why it's just completely flooded with, it's a noise market. That's all it is right now, is a noise market.
You said everything's off the shelf, but do you need to get a hold of a manufacturer to produce this for you, or is it ready to go now?
Okay, so the system that I have, this is a 10-year-old video card, dude. 10 years old. I'm doing this with not brand new, top-of-the-line shit. The minimum system requirements, I mean, like I said, I came up with the idea 6 years ago. I'm like, dude, this stuff already exists. I can go buy it used now. But that was 6 years ago. So the prices are only going to keep going down as time goes on. I'm using the minimum system requirements for a 4K system. So again, if you're doing a 1080p, you can use different, cheaper, more available hardware. And when, it's only a matter of time once I go live, when some of these manufacturers contact me and beat down my door, they're going to be like, it's going to be a cry in the meme. Should I take my money? Yeah. It is our intention to produce specific hardware that's smaller, lighter, faster, better, high speed, low drag, and then be able to do group buys so we can do bulk orders and keep the price down for everybody. And yeah, again, I'm trying to create a global community. And let me explain. So right now, if you take a data center, they're trying to build one in Botetourt County, which is down the road from me. There's a sign in my yard right now that says no data centers, and my neighbors love it. This is a percentage of a data center. So let me run some numbers through you real quick, okay? How much of the global digital cyberspace data center server farm economy do the consumers of the world actually consume by and large? Like, if you took all the data centers in the world and you pulled them all into one space and you said, okay, how much of that, like we're using right now, voice over IP services for a server slice, how much of that are we actually using? How much a percentage of the global data farm server usage are we actually responsible for? And it's actually less than 10%. So here's what I'm proposing. What if we took that 10% and we just spread it out in every town, every city in the world, so that there's just regular people that have that part of that 10% among them, and then we've decentralized that centralized data node, and now they can keep their fucking data centers. We don't need them anymore because we got our own hardware. We can self-host. And so now people no longer go through AWS services. They can now contact their local homeboy, and they're like, hey, Kev, yo, I need to borrow your server slice for a minute, for this blah, blah, blah project I'm working on. I need some HPC, GDDR6, very fast memory to run this program. I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. Pay me this much. Here's the service fees. This is how much power it costs me. This is what the average going rate for the use of my HP services are, based on other competitive prices. That's what I'm up to.
Okay, Kevin. Now, I want to help, right? I want to help you get the word. I mean, that's why I'm having you on this program. I didn't even know what you were coming on here to talk about, but I'm I'm a little bit blown away here. I'm pleasantly surprised, let's say. And what can I label like a show like this that would really encapsulate what we're doing here? Like the Falconer grassroots streaming system, the decentralized system busting. Is there a phrase maybe I could use to capture as much attention as possible?
End of the bio-digital convergence, because that's what this represents, is a solution so that we no longer have to worry about mass surveillance. We're going to end it. We're going to provide the decentralized solution, and we're just going to run our own body cams, essentially.
And run that by me again. Run that by me one more time. End of the bio-digital what?
Convergence.
Convergence. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to write that down because this is key, because this is you know, we're busting the wine bottle against the hull of the ship, and we want to turn heads is what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
This technology definitely has the capability of turning heads, but if we don't get it out there, then they win. So we got to get it out there.
Soon.
So, listen,
you know, I've never asked people for money. I've run for president twice. I'm running again. I've never asked people for money. But listen, I really, really wish I had like $6,000 right now. Because if I had $6,000, I could finish buying all the rest of the parts I need, and I could go online sooner. And, you know, part of the challenge of building these systems is we live in a world, okay? And when you live in a world and you're buying 10-year-old, you know, video cards, you know, you're buying them off of, because you can't find this stuff. You know, most people throw stuff away. And once it's 10 years old, like what use is it? You can't really sell it for anything anymore. So then
the issues that you talked about earlier, the RAM prices, what's going on right now with computer parts.
The scalpers need to be shot. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be nice about it. The scalpers need to be fucking dragged out in the road, put live on fucking TikTok and shot. And we need to make an example of them, be like, you what you guys are doing is dangerous to the rest of us. Okay. And that's intolerable. But so these are a couple of video cards here. I got these off of Marketplace. And so I paid full price for them thinking they worked. And you know, that's what you have to deal with. So some of the money that I've actually spent on the system parts that I have was basically trash, because I ended up getting parts that either were broken, didn't work, or, you know, RMA issues or whatever. So yeah, you know, if I had another $6,000 right now, I could finish putting everything together in the next month. But right now, you know, this month I'm going to spend probably $3,000 on parts, and then I have to spend another $3,000 next month. So that's kind of how I budgeted it out. I mean, I'm eating food out of cans, guys. Okay. In order to fund this, I'm doing all this myself. Nobody's giving you money. Nobody's funding me. You know, I don't have any sponsors or anything like that. But listen, if you have people that want to throw me fucking $6,000, I will not turn them down.
Well, I hope not. I hope you wouldn't, because you know, we can see what you're doing here, but how are we going to get this money to you? Do you have a website? Do you have a Cash App name? Or
I can give you my PayPal. I can give you my PayPal and you can check that out. But I own the website. I am theblackswan.com. And you
the can blackswan.com.
I am theblackswan.com, because I'm the black swan.
I am theblackswan.com.
Yep.
Okay, and so we go there, we get your PayPal.
Well, no. That's my website domain that I own. So if you go on like Who Is, you can actually see there's my name, Kevin Davies, is actually attached to that website. My email is iamtheblackswan.com, spelled out DOTCOM, not dot and then, you know, COM, @gmail.com. I am theblackswan, DOTCOM, spelled out @gmail.com. I am theblackswan.com, and that's my PayPal.
Okay, you hear that, everybody? If you want to help Kevin and myself get the word out by perhaps donating a little bit, there's certainly, you know, I'm sure there's certainly much more wasteful things that you are spending money on at the moment. But if you want to help a real cause, then email iamtheblackswan@gmail.com. Did I get that right, Kevin?
iamtheblackswan.com, DOTCOM@gmail.com.
Okay, iamtheblackswan.com@gmail.com.
Yep.
iamtheblackswan.com@gmail.com. Okay, hopefully everybody has that now. I'll be sure to include that in our description as well.
I'm sure they'll message you or something like that if they can't figure it out.
Well, we want to make it easy, because you know, hopefully other hosts see this and they also invite you on, and we're able to propagate the message here. Now,
I love you all very much. I did this for all of you. If they kill me, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure you guys got this first before they can stop it.
Okay. And Kevin, please be careful with those canned foods. I know they are very high in sodium. We want you to live as long as possible. You look like a younger guy than me. I'd say you're what, 35? How old are you?
I turned 42 next month or this month.
Okay. You know, no gray hairs yet or anything. Looks like you're pretty healthy, but please watch out for that sodium intake. I know that soup is probably very good, but I'm sure you could buy some fruits or something like that instead.
Listen, I've got a deep freezer in my kitchen, and last week I bought $100 of Bubba Brang burgers, you know, and they were on sale for $3 a box. Normally they're like $13 to $15 a box. It's like 2 pounds of beef for $3. I was like, dude, that's so crazy. I couldn't believe it. I bought $100 worth. So like, you know, I have a deep freezer, man. Nobody in my house starves. Everybody here eats good. I'm joking about cans, because like I try to keep my budget for food low so that I can spend more money on my crap. I mean, supercomputer parts.
Okay. So you wake up, Kevin, and you immediately start going at this stuff. You start tinkering. Yeah. And this is every day.
It's my life. Once I go live and I've got some subscribers and you know, some money's coming my way, you guys have no idea what I'm working on. I haven't even gone into the full gambit yet. Like, I've got stuff that you guys haven't seen and I haven't shown you yet that it's going to blow your mind when you see it. And you're like, it's going to be like Fry in the meme. People are going to be shaking fistfuls of money at me. Here, I'll show you something cool real quick. Okay. I'll show you something. So, when you're doing live 4K video encoding, for those that are unaware and the uninitiated, there's two standards. There's H.264 and H.265. H.264 is the older standard. It works. It does a good job. However, H.265 is like the new hotness, and it's very efficient, energy efficient, and so on. And the problem when you're doing 4K video encoding is that, like, basically you need a workstation. Like, you know, you'd need like a desktop computer to do that. And, you know, you ever tried to shove a desktop computer in your backpack and hook it up to a battery and carry it around with you? Raise your hand if you want to do that. Right, that's not sexy at all. So this is what I've got. So these, I know it looks like a PCI. It looks like a PCI card that's in this bag here, but actually, this is not a PCI card. This is just like a riser card that has a SATA power connector on the back. You can get these. You can find these on Alibaba and places like that. And this is a fiber uplink, 10 gig fiber uplink. It's got the transponders in them. Why am I showing you this? See, these have an adapter that goes into the M.2 port of like a regular computer, like a laptop here, like I have featured. And this allows me to interconnect two laptops via a 10 gig connection to basically make this like a desktop workstation power-wise, but now we can put it into a backpack. So now I don't have to carry around a desktop computer to do all that number crunching for the H.265 compression. And I just run that on two laptops instead of one. There you go. There's the magic.
The magic. I love it. So shouldn't you have like something set up now, like a YouTube channel or, something where you can kind of track the progress on this stuff? I mean, surely, there should be something like that, right? Maybe a BitChute channel or something like that.
All right. Let me demonstrate real quick. So I've got stuff everywhere. Okay. So this is the AMD Radeon 64 HBM2 liquid cooled card. I'm gonna show you one of them, so you can kind of get an idea of what I got here. These cards were like 10 years old at the time. These are like HBM2, also known as high bandwidth memory, has a very, very high bit rate pass. It's like, you know, over 1,000 bits wide. Okay, like GDDR6 is not even a tenth of that. So these cards, these video cards, came liquid cooled from the factory, had their own coolers and everything, and they have 8 gigabytes. Of what's called HBM2. Very, very fast, highly specialized memory. It's not like DDR memory. where you can desolder, you know, deball and upgrade. The memory that this stuff, these older cards have, is it's actually built into the die. It's baked in, so you can't upgrade it. It's not completely non-upgradable. Why am I showing you this? These cards, these 10-year-old cards, use almost 400 watts under load, and I'm running 8 of them. Do the
That's
math.
A lot of electricity.
It's the juice, bro. It's the juice. Yeah. That's where the majority, that's where the majority of my expense is going. Like, I'm not even joking. So the reason why my server isn't running and active like right now is because all of my money is buying parts. Because once I've got my parts, then I can afford the power bill. But I can't pay the power bill while I'm still buying the parts. I'll never get anything done. Does that answer your question?
Gotcha. Sure. It's all worth it because this is going to change the world.
Amen.
Here you have it, folks. Kevin, a man living beneath his means in order to make the world a better place. In many ways, he is a hero. But, Kevin, is this dangerous? I mean, I can only imagine any type of system busting.
Duh, of course it's dangerous.
Well, yeah, I mean, once this goes out there, I'm nervous about your safety.
So actually, my mayor knows about what I'm doing. He lives down the block from me. I actually had to call like the local SWAT guys, and I'd be like, "Look, I'm getting ready to do this thing, and in case you guys get calls where I'm some kind of weird terrorist, I was like, here's my info. Look up my background. You're gonna see I was in the Marine Corps. Like, whatever they're saying is bullshit. Don't believe them." And they're like, "Okay, yeah," because SWATting is such a normal thing now. Like, you can literally call, especially if you're gonna go live or do something cool. You can just literally call your local SWAT team and be like, "Yo, I'm about to do something really, really crazy. And if people try to call and SWAT me, just know that they're just trying to prank and they're trying to get, you know, bullshit happen." Those are the kind of steps you have to take. As this address is not on the books. Nobody knows that I'm here. I mean, I pay my rent and everything, but like nobody knows that I'm at this location. My address is somewhere else. So when people like try to go and knock on my door and try to figure out where I live and who I am and all that stuff, they're gonna have fun. But yeah,
well, talking about weirdos. I'm talking more about like the elite and their, you know, they control gangs and things like that.
So that's, I mean, obviously, listen. If there's one thing that I know about bullies, is that they're all cowards, all of them. They talk a big talk, and yeah, they killed Charlie. But they only did that because they need to instill fear in others. And the reason why they had to do that is because they know that eventually it's going to come back on them. So they can kill me if they want, but they won't do that because I was in the Marine Corps. And the people that told me to join and become the president, they're like, "Dude, you need to run for president." Those people I served with, those people know me better than just about anybody. And if they ask me to run for president, they're not joking. Somebody comes to kill me, okay, and my life suddenly comes to a swift and mysterious end. There are some people, friends of mine, that will hunt them down to the corners of the globe and gut them like fucking fish where they stand. So you, trust me, okay? There's stuff built in and baked into what I'm doing that is, I let them come. You hear me? Let them fucking come. I'm ready for it.
So obviously you've already thought about this quite a bit and you have put measures in place.
Oh yeah. I've already signed my name to the Book of Life, brother. I've already signed my name to the Book of Life. I am here for the Great Commission. Which is why I'm on End of Days Radio, brother. What do you want me to say?
You're going full on Tyler Durden, I think was his name from Fight Club.
The first rule of Fight Club applies.
Oh yeah! In fact, that's the line you said at the beginning of this program. Were you a little bit inspired by that story?
You know, I really think that art is such an amazing thing, and I'm going to make another quote. No people may be kept under the threat of the force of arms forever. The greatest force in the universe is the need for freedom. And against that force, no army or tyrant may stand. That's a quote from Citizen Jakar, which is a character in the show Babylon 5, probably one of the greatest space operas ever made. And, you know, it's an incredibly powerful, truthful thing to say, and that comes from an art medium. So, you know, we've got art all around us with incredible, inspiring, amazing things, and we should definitely use it. If it applies, absolutely.
And you are a believer. You are a Christian, correct?
Amen.
Yeah. Have you been your whole life?
When I was 4 years old in 1988, I was aware that the adults, it's like they were playing a weird game, you know, because when you're a kid, you know what a game is, you know, you play with the other kids. And so, like, I was like, man, what are the adults are doing this weird thing? Like, it's almost like they're playing a weird game. Like, they're in on some kind of secret weird game. And, like, maybe they don't understand that they're playing, you know? Like, when I was four when I knew that. I knew that church was fake. I knew that the roads were fake. I knew the clothes were fake. The houses, like, most of the stuff was fake. It was part of that game. And I knew that it was, like, my mommy was not going to understand. When I was 4 years old, I knew she wasn't going to understand. And the reason why I came to all these realizations is because I knew that God was real. No one had to explain it to me. The adults didn't have to explain it to me. And it always baffled me, you know, being a young person, very, very young, that like, why do so few people believe in God? I don't understand. It just seemed innate. It was like, I experience God. How is everybody else like not experience God? It didn't make any sense to me. It still doesn't today. It's mind blowing to me that more people aren't believers.
And you're a full on
guard and say, oh, that just happened by accident. Really?
What was that?
How can you look at a blade of grass in your yard and then say to yourself, that was an accident?
What? Oh, yeah, I agree. Or a beautiful woman or an octopus or I could go on and on. A shell. What is that called when they're called spirals? In nature.
Oh, yeah, the golden ratio, Fibonacci sequence, phi, yeah.
Fibonacci spirals, yeah. The fact that that stuff shows up in nature. So you're seeing all this stuff going on with Epstein.
Better people... a millstone.
What's that?
Better a millstone. It's written twice in the New Testament. Look it up. Better a millstone. Listen, everybody thinks that Jesus is some kind of pacifist. Bro, let me tell you. He said, if you have a cloak and bag, no sword, sell them and buy one. Jesus telling people, his disciples that are going to go out and preach the gospel, he said, the world's a dangerous place. Make sure you bring a sword. You might have to use it. Jesus was not a pacifist. If you think Jesus was a pacifist, that Satan has lied to you. Lucifer has lied to you and you believed it. Jesus said, better that a millstone be hung around the neck and drop them into the sea. Better. We can do better than that.
I take it you're anti-gun control then.
Yeah, absolutely. It shall not be infringed. I think that's really easy to understand.
You're also a big believer in America.
I wouldn't necessarily that I'm so much of a big believer in America, but I do support the Constitution and I do support the principles of inalienable rights endowed by our Creator. That are not granted by government, that are not granted by the Constitution, that are inherent to us as spirit-filled beings, as the hosts that we are here.
Okay, I think I like that. How about the end times? Do you feel like we are in end times at the moment?
I think probably the most confusing thing that believers face from the accuser, from Lucifer and the Luciferian agenda, is that they have been convinced that prophecy is unavoidable, that we have no free will, and everything just has to happen in the book of Revelation as it is written. And I cannot disagree more, because Revelation was written by the synagogue of Satan. The entire book of Revelation was written by the synagogue of Satan, and they have an agenda to fool the world. It even says, and they don't even hide it. They say in the book of Revelation, this is meant to fool you. If you fall for it, it's your fault. That requires a relationship with God and the Holy Spirit to guide you so that you know what's true and what's not. And the way that I see it, our Creator God gave us free will. So why would God write a prophecy that we can't do anything about? And we have no play or free will to change. Personally, this is my belief. God gave us the power to change the circumstances of those end times outcomes. If it turns out really bad, that's our fault. If it turns out really good, that's also our fault.
But I should reiterate that this isn't necessarily for, you know, just for the truth community. I mean, a guy like Logan Paul could probably benefit from your platform just as much as a guy like me.
I'm going to tell you something cool, okay? I mean, it's arbitrary, honestly, you know, and it's all bread and circus type shit. But I'm going to give a base use for it. Imagine the manager of the Buffalo Bills. He shows up at my door and he's like, dude, let me get one. I'm like, sure, no problem, bro. And I'll go with him and, you know, we'll set it all up for him and then he'll go live. Like the PPV scene on fucking VR for like managers of fucking major sports teams. Dude, this shit is out of control. It's, dude, you want to talk about sports betting? How insane it is now? Yeah, wait until the fucking manager of these sports teams has a fucking Falconer on them all the time. The fantasy football shit's going to be outrageous.
So technically, I could go down to my local high school football game and I could broadcast it to the world practically for free. I mean, other than the cost of setting the system up. Oh, man. Yeah. This is actually a threat to the sports industry in a way. I mean, not a threat, but something that could revolutionize it, actually.
Because imagine somebody buying one of these systems to gift to the computer science of high schools all across America. Some billionaire is like, oh, I just want to write this off on my taxes, and buys a Falconer for every major high school in the United States. You know, and they've all got one of these things now. Well, now they can become the high school can literally produce their own media the way that colleges have their own, you know, radio stations, and they do their own media production as part of the curriculum, right? Why can't we afford this for our high schools? I think they honestly need to have access to this level of technology or better.
Definitely. Or let's say I want to start my own little baseball league or a pro wrestling organization. I could actually set that up and be good to go without having to make all these deals.
I'm going to give you one of the best use cases because I'm going to benefit from this. So I can say this. You have a crazy idea. You're like, I figured out a way to get asteroids to Earth and we're going to make so much money. That's going to change everything. Right. So if you get these venture capitalists, you know, and you send emails, they're like, okay, all right. Yeah, okay, sure. You're the guy that solves the asteroid problem.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the problem? Because we talked about this in the same domain earlier in the broadcast, right? How can people trust you? Because you were asking about proof of work, right? So now I've got a Falconer on. There's 90 days of proof of my diligence. There's 90 days where a venture capitalist can, you know, pay for membership. They can hop on my server. They can review my past footage and be like, this guy's a hard worker. He's dedicated. This isn't a scam. Like, he's not scamming anybody. Holy shit, this guy's really doing. Okay, all right, I need to send him some money. That is why Falconer will change the world. To give people a visible record of trust that you can take to the bank.
Because of the proof of work, this means it can't be altered by AI, right?
And it's anti, what do they call that? Deep fake. So now we have a decentralized network with data that doesn't touch the public networks, which has all the compromised data and all the compromised systems. So yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, this could be a matter of record that could go to congressional hearings. It can go to the Supreme Court, et cetera. Yep. 100%.
So it's actually more secure than the existing stuff that's out there in a way.
2 years ago, when I went to the FBI about some of the stuff that's been happening in the world, because I wrote the white paper on virtual quantum computation and post-quantum safe encryption, and I offered it to the FBI. I went all the way down to their Birmingham office there in Alabama, and the agent still turned me away, man. And I said, look, at some point, you guys are going to get to a place where you can no longer hide this from the public. And when that happens, just come find me. We need to go somewhere where there's no telephone lines and we can have a quiet conversation away from cell phones and I will tell you what you need to do and we can protect our national security. But yeah, no, it is my intention to give everybody their digital privacy back if I can.
Well, that would be wonderful. I mean, that's probably the main problem with nowadays. You mentioned flock cameras. That's just the tip of the iceberg. We've been doing nothing but give away more and more of our rights. That seems to be one of the main focuses of the agenda. So yeah, Kevin, I'm excited about this, but we've went almost an hour and a half here and we are approaching the end of the interview, but Just for the sake of thoroughness, I want to go ahead and let you hop back on that soapbox one more time, step behind the podium, and just anything you left out, anything you still want to say to the people out there, anything you want to plug or promote, please, sir, do that now.
Don't panic, organize. Or said another way, don't panic, abandon ship. Factionization is inevitable. Essentially, it doesn't matter which way it falls, whether the elite win or whether we overtake them. One way or the other, everything's going to get shut down. Either the elite are going to shut it down and we're going to be in chaos and they're going to win, or we do it to them first, right? We pull the rug out from under them, catch them by surprise because they're sitting on their hubris right now, and they're expecting that we won't unite, that we're just going to keep bickering amongst one another. If I can say anything, it would be that I love you all very much. And the only way we're going to make this through is if we unite organically. We're going to have to come together and we're going to have to shut it all down. And my proposal, and I'm sure you've heard me talk about this before, the Worldwide Party. We don't need to panic. We don't need to loot. We don't need to burn. We don't need to destroy anything. We don't even need to kill anybody. We just need to get everybody together and put everybody in a good mood so that we can all start, you know, the process of working through what we need to do next, what comes next, and how we're all going to navigate that, you know, to get ultimately what we all want. And this is the unifying factor here. We all want a world that is free for our children, like Pokemon. Kids don't pay for stay. They don't pay for food. They don't pay for their school. They don't pay for their travel. They don't pay for their veterinary bills. They can go anywhere in the world safe, like Ash Ketchum leaving his mom's house at 10 years old and traveling all over the world. What's missing? What's in the way? Like, we've, as a civilization, all the structure is there. We've done everything to generate all of the resources that are necessary to basically make this a possibility. So what's left? There you go. So Worldwide Party's coming. Tell everybody, if you tell five, to tell five more, right? Mathematical proliferation rules apply. It can happen in as little as 2 weeks. In other words, we can get a message out to the world, word of mouth, even without the internet, because this has been done before. This isn't something new. I mean, people have been throwing giant, you know, civilization-wide parties for generations now. I don't know why anybody thinks this is like impossible or something. But yeah, you know, I'm just trying to bring everybody together. I'm trying to circumvent as much risk as possible and save as many lives as possible, because we're going to need every single mind, every single body, every single capable person that we can in the years coming forward. And the final thing that I will say is that the reason why all of these things are happening is because the elites are aware of the meta crisis that's coming, and they're waiting until the absolute last minute to tell us so that they can basically use the Hegelian dialectic to, you know, use that panic to gain control. So with the meta crisis is, we're going to lose 2/3 of the world population in less than 10 years. It's going to happen in like a 2.5 to 5 year window, and we're going to lose, like, it's not a small amount of people. I'm going to give a comparison. The country of Latvia or Estonia, they're real quiet countries. They're very quiet because they don't have a whole very large population. And even their large population centers are not super dense. If you can imagine walking into your downtown municipal area of your major city or town and it being a ghost town in broad daylight, that's what it's going to be like in less than 10 years. Because everybody's going to die off from old age disease. Dude, the boomers are not okay. And then we're going to lose all of the engineers, all of the PhDs, all of the people that literally built the education and the foundations that you know, gave the knowledge necessary to build all of this in the first place, much less maintain it. Like, the clock is ticking, y'all. I'm putting the warning out there, and I'm lighting the fires of Gondor, and I'm letting everybody know the meta crisis is real, and we need to take it seriously, and we need to unite. It needs to happen yesterday. And if you want, you can write Kevin Alexander Davies on your paper ballot when you vote for president in 2028, and I'll win by a landslide, and I'll fix all this shit. I promise. You have my word. Hand to God. Scout's honor.
All right, Kevin. Excellent. And I hope to keep track of your ongoing progress in the future, and definitely would like to touch bases with you again, perhaps do a part two and check on the progress of the Falcon system, which I have just been made aware of, and I am very happy to hear is in the works. And of course, reach out if there's anything else I can do to help.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Yeah, but other than that, thank you. Thank you for reaching out. Thank you for coming on this program and putting on a very innovative show. Very novel. It's incredible. I'm amazed. Thank you again.
I'm really bland and unentertaining too. Like, I'm not expressive at all.
Wait, what was that?
I'm really bland and unentertaining too. Like, I'm not expressive at all. Like,
no, you are certainly entertaining. I think that we can all agree on that. And that's why we definitely want to have you again. But Kevin, thanks a lot. And until next time, my friend, I will talk to you later. All right. Wait, where did I go? Why am I not still up there? I should still be up there. What's going on here? What did I do? There I am. Okay. Wow. What do I even say to that? That was very different. That was entertaining. That was mind-blowing. That was unexpected. You know, I just got a message. I was actually taking a couple weeks off because there's some stuff in my life I need to take care of. Unexpectedly, I apologize for that. But all of a sudden, I get a message from Kevin, and he's wanting to come on. And something told me, you know what? You need to do this show. I don't know what it was, but some kind of inner feeling, some kind of intuition. That's the best way I can explain it. And here I am hit with something that legitimately does seem to solve a lot of problems that the truth community has. Decentralization, censorship, issues streaming to a lot of people, bandwidth issues, getting algorithmed out, being sandboxed. The list goes on and on. All of these frustrations that I've had, all these frustrations that friends of mine, colleagues have had, trying to spread truth and actually gain some kind of audience without Big Brother coming in and saying, "Hey, no, you can't do that because you didn't kiss the goat's starfish, or you did not do some gay shit in the woods at Bohemian Grove, or you did not sacrifice your little baby cousin, et cetera, et cetera." I'm so tired of the pay to play model. I'm so tired of the gay to play model, or whatever you want to call it. The system of initiation, oath taking, selling the self out, selling your soul in various Faustian bargains. How does a guy like Kevin, how do so many people out there that have something to say get the word out there and actually reach people? You know, I've thought about newsletters, ham radio, stuff like that. I've been told we need to go on shortwave radio, which from what I understand is very expensive. How do we actually really affect any sort of change or get the word out? And here we go. We have a solution here. So people that support this, you know, at least give the guy some emotional support. If you can't, donate a little bit of cash. When we first started talking, I asked a lot of questions because I wanted to make sure that this was actually real, that this isn't, not that I would think that Kevin would ever scam us, but still, you know, I know what you guys expect of me. You expect me to ask the key questions and find out if something is actually real. And as far as my understanding, this seems very much legit. We're dealing with somebody who's a little bit of a genius, an eccentric genius, perhaps, but a genius nonetheless. Wow, I'm excited about this. And if I had 50 grand laying around, I would probably jump aboard right away. But I'll keep in touch with Kevin, and we'll see what we can work out. If I can help in any way, or perhaps be a little bit of a prototype or something like that. We'll see. And good to hear that Kevin has some protection as well. He's, in my opinion, doing something very risky. Me coming on here and talking about mythology, or, you know, talking about the same sort of things that other people talk about all the time, it's probably not that dangerous. But once you actually come out with some kind of smoking gun, system buster, that's when things will get a little bit hairy. And that's when you, get the weird phone calls and weirdos stalking you on social media and stuff like that, which we don't want, but we certainly will not capitulate. We will not capitulate. We will not capitulate ever, because we would rather die than not be free. And if we can all adopt that mentality, then the system simply will not stand, because there's a lot more of us than there are of them. That's why they created this whole system, right? It's a system of con artistry and grifting where they need all of us down lower on the pyramid to support them and what they're doing. And without us little guys, there's no big guys. There's nobody to stand on the shoulders of. So they need us. Wow. Boy, did I mention that I love this show? You know, many years ago, many of you will tell me, like, Daniel, you used to have all the big guests on. You used to have all the big names on. But that's not really the type of show that I really wanted to do in my heart. So I made a decision that rather than compete for popularity, rather than make it all about views and numbers and fame and money and whatnot, I was going to be the guy that would have the, I don't want to say little guy on, but I'd want to have the people on that aren't necessarily welcome on all the other programs out there, because that's what everybody else is doing. And that's fine. If you're doing a podcast or a program to make money, that's fine. If you're doing it to become famous, that's fine. I don't really care. To each his own. Those are perfectly legitimate reasons to do what you're doing. Whatever your incentive is, that's fine. But that's not me. I've always known that I needed to do this. I need to be the guy that's here so that the people that have things going on, like Kevin, have somewhere where they can get that message out. And it's moments like this where I am very proud of that decision. Or when somebody emails me and tells me, hey, you had such and such person on, and I wasn't expecting much, but that was one of the greatest interviews I've ever heard. You know, things like that really, really stroke my ego. Not that it's all about my ego, but boy, does that make me feel good. And I do apologize for missing shows. It's been crazy lately in my life. That's the best way I could put it. I'm 43 years old, and it seems as though that this is the big arc of my life. This is when things really matter, and I just simply have a lot going on. All the friends I've made, all the people that have been on here, all the researchers and authors and personalities, people that are awake, people that are asleep, people that just don't give an F, all these people that I've met, they're not all my friends, no, but they all hold some kind of place in my heart, certainly. And I mean, this is better than being a big party animal and having a ton of friends and a ton of acquaintances. Being able to touch bases with people the way that I do is a true pleasure. You know, I heard the other day that kids nowadays, they don't party like they used to. Like when I was in high school, it was all about partying. It was all about smoking pot, drinking, meeting up, hooking up. And I don't know if it's COVID or what. You know, I know I've talked about this a little bit before, but I don't know if it's COVID or what caused it. But the kids, they don't really party like they used to. They don't go to malls. There are no more malls, so that's gone. But they're not even interacting socially anymore. Is there a greater sign that things have gone to shit for our society or for the world than that? I mean, you're so afraid of putting the phone down. You don't even want to step outside your house. Your parents, they're so overprotective. Everybody's so isolated. Everybody's so addicted to their smartphones, they don't even want to go out and party with other kids. And I'm sure some people will say, hey, Daniel, that's for the better. Do you really think young people should be going out and getting effed up and et cetera, et cetera? No, not really. But I don't think it's good to not go through that stage at all. I mean, that's a stage that we all go through. And to think that young people aren't getting that experience and are turning into a bunch of social anxiety freaks or shut-ins or whatever you want to call it. I mean, I was kind of like that a little bit, especially in my younger days, but the realization that kids on average are all becoming like that, where they don't want to go party. That is incredibly disturbing to me. But it's just another sign of the times, I suppose. Kids, go out and, you know, live your lives. Don't sit there on the internet all day, because like we learned in this program, it's not your internet. And this AI stuff is making it so much worse. We're told what to think. We are told what to believe. We are told who's cool and who's not. I suppose you could say that's always been the case. We've always been told who's cool and who's not by the record industry, et cetera, et cetera. In other news, my Mariners aren't doing very well. There's not much time left to play, and they're, what, 4 games behind Houston? You know, since 2022, we've gone to the playoffs almost every year. I don't think it's going to happen this time. I think that the team might be giving up a little bit, but, oh, wait, hold on. The Bat Mom says there are still malls. Absolutely, there's still malls. I go to the mall every once in a while, but it's not the same. There's no KB Toys. There's no bookstores. There's no CD stores. Basically, what's happened is the smaller malls, they're shutting down, and the bigger malls are pretty much handling all the load. So, yes, you're right. There's still malls, but I would say the culture of young people going out and hanging out at the mall every day and, you know, spending all day there, catching the bus, hanging out there, I don't think that really exists in the same way that it used to. I mean, absolutely it doesn't. There's no question about it. And not that the consumerism going on in the malls is such a great thing, but much better than Jeff Bezos or Amazon controlling everything, getting away with not paying taxes like the other stores have to, and being able to control the entire marketplace. That's definitely not good for humanity. You know, one thing I miss is just going to the mall, going to the food court, like even going to McDonald's. Back, I remember the chicken sandwiches were like that big. They were huge, and you actually got a full patty. And it was like $5. So you could go load up on shitty food, go look at magazines at the bookstore, maybe pick one out to buy. And they'd usually come with something cool, like a CD or a collectible card or something like that. Then you'd go buy maybe some CDs, and they'd all be arranged in order of popularity, like what's hot this month, what just came out, what's lighting up the charts. Now, I don't know what you do. You go on YouTube and you learn what's cool. Listen to music for free. That's another thing. None of these artists can make any money anymore, so they have to go on tour like for the rest of their lives, because without CDs, the people make so much less money. They make money off like Spotify and stuff like that, but it's just a small percentage of what artists would make back when there was records and CDs and things like that. So they have to go and they have to tour pretty much forever. Like you know, Ariana Grande, she's like 40 pounds and she's about to blow away in the wind, but the record company's like, no, you gotta keep touring, even though she really needs to go lay down and drink some soup or something like that. Now that's a true travesty right there, that whole Illuminati witchery Ariana Grande thing. That's a whole rabbit hole. All of them are, all those pop stars. Anyways, the Mariners, they're not doing well this year. I don't think they're going to be going to the World Series. But we'll see what happens. Hopefully the guys can get it together, go on a huge win streak, and turn it into another miracle season. Let's hope for some of that Mariner magic. And likewise, I hope that your team, whoever that may be, and the sports and individuals that you enjoy do well as well. I know everybody can't win, but people always say like, oh, sports are Illuminati, they're distraction and stuff like that. You don't think God's in there too somewhere? You don't think God is in a football game or a baseball game or an MMA fight or something like that? I really doubt that it's just all evil. Or people that are like, oh, sports are all fixed, but MMA's not. No, fight sports are probably the most fixed. I hate to break it to you. It's like straight up pro wrestling sometimes, but that's not important right now, is it? Not when the world is dying. Check me out on the Michael Deacon program, the old co-host of End of Days Radio. You know, he has his own show, the Michael Deacon program, which I actually co-host part-time. So check me out on there. That's more of a comedy show. And how it got that way, I'm not sure. But you have Mike Hideous on there, you know, the legendary Misfits frontman. And he can be pretty entertaining. He's very right-wing, though. So oftentimes we argue about, that whole thing. And a lot of times I just kind of argue for the sake of arguing. somebody's got to do it. But a very good show. He's come a long ways in developing his show, and it's turned into something very unique. And I enjoy it quite a bit. I listen even when I'm not on there. So check out the Michael Deacon program, and especially the episodes with yours truly on there. I'm still playing Ark Raiders. Ark Raiders it's called an extraction shooter. The story is I got into the Modern Warfare 3, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, got into the zombies. And in that particular game, they have like a extraction shooter type of zombies, and got really addicted to that. So I was like, man, this type of game is really cool. What else is out there? And I'm 43 years old. I'm not at the tip of the, I'm not on the cutting edge of knowing everything going on in gaming anymore. So I had to kind of learn about what extraction shooters were. And I heard there's a really popular one called Ark Raiders. And my God, this has got to be one of the most addicting games that I've ever played. When I'm done editing the show and everything, I'm probably going to go play a little Ark Raiders. Very different gameplay. And I don't want to encourage people to waste their lives sitting around playing video games. But if you haven't tried it yet, I can assure you it's a lot of fun. It's especially when you get together with a few other players and you play as teams versus other teams, it's some of the most chaotic and fun action that I've ever engaged in. It's a lot more fun than like your traditional first person shooter, team deathmatch, or even stuff like Fortnite or PUBG. I tried PUBG. PUBG is pretty cool, but ended up not really being my game of choice. I'd like to talk a little bit of gaming on here. Still watching JCW, Juggalo Wrestling, Juggalo Championship Wrestling. As you know, Vince Russo, the head writer during the Attitude Era, along with Ed Ferrara, but Vince Russo is writing for JCW. He made a deal with the Clowns, Insane Clown Posse, and he's putting on some really great shows. Like, this is probably the best pro wrestling that I've seen since back when I was a kid, and I've mentioned that several times on the show, only because I really like what's going on there. It's a real entertaining program. I was even thinking of going to that gathering of the Juggalos thing because I like the show so much, but I found out it was like $300, and I don't have an RV, so that would not have worked out. But just to see that live, I think would be pretty cool. The gathering of the Juggalos did take place, I believe, it was a week or two ago. They busted like hundreds of pounds of drugs. The police went in there and busted people for hundreds of pounds of drugs. And a lot of people got really messed up. Some kid went missing, but they found her. Thank God. That whole thing is its own rabbit hole. Like, these rappers that have been around since the 90s, and this gathering goes on every year. I'm sure many of you know, festivals nowadays aren't that great. Like, everything's overpriced and it tends to not be the best experience, but these people keep going out there, and you can watch videos of it on YouTube and whatnot. There's definitely a lot of drug use going on at those places, which I'm not interested in. I'm just interested in the wrestling and the music. But that's one thing that's probably kept me out of a lot of festivals, is I'm not a drug guy. When I was younger, like I said, I like to party and stuff like that, but I'll do a little pot here and there. But other than that, just drugs do nothing for your life. Like, they do nothing but drag you down, especially the hard drugs, of course. But that goes for drinking and oftentimes pot use too. You know, if you're sitting around smoking weed all day to the point where you don't even remember what it feels like to be sober, that's probably not good. You know, give yourself a little tolerance break, brighten up your mind a little bit, and then do it again, and it'll be way stronger. Don't do drugs that often. That's pretty much all I've got. I was glad to be able to do the show today. I had a lot of fun, even though I wasn't planning to do one. I'm once again reminded of my purpose in life. You know, some people say they talk to God, and you and me, we oftentimes think people that say that are schizophrenic or schizoaffective or something like that. But I really think I've been talking to God here and there lately. And God tells me that I'm supposed to wake people up. And I think to myself, you know, this show, it's got a very dedicated following, but it's not like we're mainstream. We don't have millions of people listening to this, but I know I'm serving some kind of general purpose here. I know I am. I know I've inspired many others, and I've gotten people to, you know, really look into this stuff. And even I know I've inspired media outlets that are much bigger to approach these topics because they know that they're interesting. And genuinely too, I'm not throwing bullshit out there and saying, hey, look at this AI Bigfoot humping a tree. That's not what I'm about. I'm not about forgeries, fakeries, or anything like that. Everything I approach, I believe in. And if I don't, I'll say, hey, this doesn't make sense because of XYZ, because I have integrity. And I hope you do too. But I'll be back soon. And I apologize to anybody out there that misses me so much that they feel like they're going to die. I hope nobody feels that way. That's the one thing about staying a little bit smaller. You don't get a lot of stalkers and stuff like that. That's not something that I want to. I don't want stalkers. I don't want people that are like obsessed with me where they want to eat me or wear my skin or anything like that. I'll happily have my small niche podcast if it means avoiding that stuff or getting killed by some kind of, you know, like I was saying, we know these, a lot of these gangs are controlled by the elite. Sometimes they got to go out and murk certain people, and you know, they'll say it was about drugs or something like that. But you know, I can name names, like people like Anne Heche, or wasn't there somebody that, you know, just recently got taken out because they were talking about certain things? Some female celebrity. It wasn't Dolly Parton. She was in her 80s. Rest in peace to her, by the way. But you know, somebody had it was the girl from Heroes, Hayden Pantiera. I'm sorry, I'm botching that last name, but she had recently come out about certain Hollywood abuse, and I guess she was in a pretty bad relationship. And man, what a shame, right? Just beautiful girl, and you know, she got her acting career back on track. She was starring in a lot of different stuff, and she was in some of my favorite things out there, like the show Heroes or the video game Until Dawn. I'm not sure how many of you guys remember Until Dawn. She was in there with the guy from Mr. Robot, and suddenly she's dead at a young age. You know, she still has her wealth and her looks and everything, but obviously not altogether mentally healthy, because you know, look at the relationship she was in, and next thing you know, she's gone. And it's stuff like that we got to look closer at. But if you have a bit of fame, if you have a voice, they're all the harder on you. That's why you hear a lot of these things about black eyes, black eye clubs, a little warning to keep in line. Doesn't really apply to us normal folk. They just want us to drink and go back and forth about Trump or whatever the latest distraction is. But anyways, it is time to end this program. I thank you so much for joining me. I say this all the time, but you guys are why I do this program. You are the wind beneath my wings. We have plenty of great shows coming down the pipeline in the next month, so stay with me. But until then, I will see you next time. This is Daniel. I'm signing out from those broken ruins, and I will see you next time. Let's hit that music. Good night.
Of rose. talk, burn it down to nothing.